Hey, it's Dawn McGrewer, the Business Growth Coach, and welcome to Dawn of a New Era, the podcast where we talk all things health, wealth, and happiness, and where founders share the good, bad, and ugly of being an entrepreneur.
Welcome to the private island, and I literally could not do this podcast without having a fizz. Should we tell anybody that it's Wednesday and it's lunchtime?
Do you know, I thought you were going to say, I literally could not do this without you here on the island.
Well, of course. I mean, of course, Maggie, of course. I mean, you have been a key member, obviously, of the team speaking at our event. But yeah, welcome to the podcast. And I thought we needed to have a fizz to celebrate because we're about to hit a big milestone. We've known each other now since 2021. In the December we met. So for those that don't know, the amazing Maggie, Magic Maggie, is with us today. And I went all the way to LA to meet this wonderful human, only to find out that we actually live like 3 minutes away from each other, which is amazing. So the reason that I felt having a fizz was so apt is that we have a lot of conversations on our Wine Flight Wednesdays. We have an amazing wine shop near us called The Wine Cellar. Big shout out. And we spend a lot of time talking. And I think one of the biggest things that I want to address is where we are in the industry. Because when we first met in 2021, things have changed a lot for both of us. So share a little bit for those who may not already know about the magic of Maggie, who you are and what you're doing.
Gosh, well, when we met, I was known as an Instagram coach and mentor. I was a go-to strategist for female entrepreneurs. And today, 3 years later, I have grown a community of millions. I'm about to publish my first book, which is exciting.
I feel like I've lived and breathed this 9-month journey with you. Like I've birthed it too.
Yes, it feels like I've gone through a whole pregnancy with the book. And, you know, now I'm speaking on stages across the world, empowering people. And yeah, I mean, just life and business is so different to what it was 3 years ago. And I could never have predicted where this journey was going to take me because I thought I was forever going to be known as the Instagram queen. And now, yeah, I'm just empowering people to believe in themselves and growing and calling in even more amazing humans who want to be part of my community and who just want to chase after their dreams and stop playing small and start thinking big.
And I think this is the thing. So after lockdown, which for me was particularly painful, I was not one of these people who enjoyed lockdown. I had Sid the Snake living with me, which is another story. And I couldn't wait to get out. So for me, LA was my first trip. And I'd gone to meet an amazing group of women. Obviously met you and very privileged to have you in my life since. And we've been on a journey. And I think the thing is that what people don't share and they don't talk about is some of the bad situations and bad comments that come out of the online coaching industry. So if you think about where you were as an Instagram coach, what was like the key catalyst for you to make the switch? And what has been the worst part of working in online?
Honestly, I just felt so drained and exhausted after running program after program, but also kind of seeing, I'm going to call them peers because I don't like using the term competitors because I believe that there's enough room and space for everyone. But you see it a lot online that people want to take your ideas or they want to start almost undercutting you or trying to poach your clients and get them to invest in them instead of you. And I'm just not available for that. I've always been that person that there's enough room for everyone. But when something starts to really drain my energy, which it was doing, like I am not a bitchy person. I don't attract drama. I'm not available for drama. And I just didn't want to be part of that world anymore. And I was like, do you know what? I don't want to have almost people have such close and intimate access to me, and I just didn't want to be a part of an industry that I no longer felt in alignment with. So I made that decision to almost split and completely pivot the brand and really focus on actually what I now know is my mission, which is just to empower people to believe in themselves. And now I love still pouring into people, but in a completely different way, through speaking at events and retreats and on big stages. And, you know, I've just written the most incredible book, and that gets to impact millions, and it will. And I still get to change and impact people's lives. But it doesn't mean that I have to be part of drama in the process.
And I fully believe this. I've always said that I believe my business can exist even if social media didn't, and that I've been around for 20 years, I've built a solid foundation. But that solid foundation has always been about everything I've done has incorporated in person. And that's something that obviously when I went to LA, I met you, I was really passionate about. I was on the cusp of starting my sort of new way of living. And, you know, I was kind of a bit burnt out before lockdown, traveling to London, you know, every Tuesday to Thursday. So when you go through this shift and you bring real people into the community, I think it's very empowering and I think it energizes. But what would you say in terms of when we look at the online space and social media, I still feel like there are the connotations where women are pulling down other women. And it pains me, and it kind of keeps tuning me out of social, and it's pushing me back more and more. And obviously our Wine Wednesday conversations consist a lot about this, but where are we at with that, and where is it going?
The best thing people can do is really actually just stay in their own lane and focus on their own game, which is exactly what we've done over the last few years. And when you're not consuming other people's content, you literally have no idea what's going on in the outside world. And that is a great place to be, because when you're at that place, you aren't comparing yourself, you're not judging yourself, you're not experiencing FOMO, and you're pouring into you and your dreams. Whereas when you're bothered about what other people are doing, that is taking time away from you. And it also affects your well-being. It affects your mental well-being as well, especially if you're not someone who is secure and confident within themselves. And you and I have both done the work to feel very comfortable and secure and confident in what we do, that we just remain focused kind of on our businesses and on our mission, and we don't really care and aren't bothered about what's happening in the outside world. So whilst we do run online businesses, what we love doing is actually experiencing in-person connections, like, you know, offline.
Or on a private island.
Or on a private island, like we're currently at. And we still use social media to push and grow our audiences and our mailing lists. But actually, we prefer the in-person and the connection. It's just so much more powerful.
I think so many people will be inspired by this, because so many people are burnt out. They have got social media fatigue. And the thing is that what happens is that I don't think there's necessarily an intention here, but I have had so much of what I've done copied and I just tune out. I mean, I have had to do cease and desists, which is not an area I really want to be going down. But I think what happens is people go online, they look at what they perceive as competitors, and then they turn that into, I'm going to emulate what they're doing because they're super successful, so let's do more of that. And that just in turn saturates the market even more, because everyone's doing the same bloody thing, instead of just actually designing something based around your own morals, your own beliefs, your own principles. And I think where we're going now is that there are so many people operating the saturated market. I feel like I've just elevated myself out of that and away from it, and it feels calmer, and it feels more congruent, and it feels just much more fun. So I think the thing is that we were probably both told that having programs and curriculum and online stuff was the way to go. We both challenged that, both living very nice lives as a, you know, as a result of not doing it. When you think about zigging and zagging, what is your kind of life ethos as an entrepreneur? Like, if people believe something, what is your alternative?
It's just follow what your gut tells you. If something doesn't feel aligned, you're going to know very quickly, because you're either going to be scrunching your face up thinking, oh, really? Do I really need to do this? Or you're going to feel excited by it and it's going to light your soul on fire. And if it does, great, do that thing. By all means, try it, test it, see how it works for you. And if it doesn't work out, it's fine, because you're going to learn so much from it that you can carry forwards when you try again using a different approach. And yeah, I think as well, as I said before, just listening to your gut, like, that never lies. And far too often people are taking advice from others who are either not really in the industry or who are just so laser focused on almost like one dimensional on, this is the way to do it, this is the only way to do it, and if you don't do it this way, you're not going to succeed. And I don't agree with that. I'm not about the cookie cutter approach. Everyone is different. We all have different, you know, audiences, different things that we want to do, different ways of being and operating. And you get to find what feels good for you. And if it feels good, you know you're on the right track.
Mm. I almost feel like there's a trend that comes out whereby, you know, that a group of people have been to a coach's event or something like that. They've taught the thing and now everyone's teaching the thing, and it becomes a short-lived trend. And then people are wondering why, like, it didn't work, because it's not one size fits all. And I think one of the biggest things is that for me, I always talk about, you know, me being a strategist and really leaning into like business models, foundations, successful businesses, scaling businesses, which is not a passing trend. Those fundamentals stay. So when you think about like your biggest ick right now in the online space, like, what is it? I mean, I think I've got a feeling.
Oh my God, I have so many, but one that just came up when you were talking about trends. The number one thing that I hate hearing and seeing online is when people talk about trending audios on social media, especially on Instagram. Everyone's like, this is the trending audio of the week, or here are the top 10 trending audios. Use this like audio and watch your content go viral. Like, oh my goodness.
So in essence, everyone just jump on the same thing and do the same thing.
Yeah, and put the same audio. And it's never about the trending music or the trending audio ever. It's about your piece of content. If your piece of content speaks to who it is you want to be speaking to, aka your ideal client or your target audience, then it will start to gain traction and people will start engaging with it. And if it's powerful enough, yeah, it will go viral. But it's never down to the audio. Trending audios are just not a thing. But sadly, in the online space, people get obsessed with it. They spend hours searching for it. So that is definitely, I'd say, definitely one of my biggest pet peeves.
What do you feel about, I mean, we both know a lot of people who do this intentionally, like showing up on social media, being super controversial, yeah, just for engagement?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's the controversial piece, but there's also the piece where people use, I'm going to use the term loosely, almost like powerful killer headlines, which entice people in, like, how
clickbait.
I had, yeah, clickbait titles, then suddenly everyone wants to watch the piece of content, which I get, you know, I'm all for a clickbait title. But then what you then find out is the person has lied, or they've falsified, or they've not been speaking the truth about what actually the end result was. And they're doing it because they want people to read the piece of content, and they also want people to invest in them. But actually, 9 times out of 10, they're a fraud, and they're not completely transparent or doing business ethically or in integrity. So yeah, like, I hate that, and I see it all the time.
I think my honest pet hate at the moment is, and I'm so sick of seeing it, it almost drains me and saps me of energy as I go online and I just switch off. Why is there a need to almost go on, find somebody and kind of like name and shame them online? I mean, what is that about?
I don't know. I think some people just, they want drama. And I think as well, they think it's going to get them more visible and it's going to get them being talked about. And they want that. Like, a lot of people do crave that. And I think it's such a shame when that happens, because it does happen a lot, because you're tearing other people down to try and get ahead of them. And that is not ethically or morally okay.
Yeah, regardless of what they've done. I mean, I just always feel like what can be done in private, should stay kind of like in private. I believe in sharing what we are going through as entrepreneurs and having a voice and having your own story. But I think it's a very different thing than bringing the drama in. I find it exhausting. And I think, what would it be like to work with that person? If this is what they're bringing online, what the hell is it going to be like in their space? So if you think back to your roots growing up and where we see social media today, there's a big focus on like this whole materialistic and society driven look and feel. Where are you with that?
I'm nowhere near that.
I mean, I knew this was going to be the response, but we talk about it a lot, and I really struggle with people's complete sort of like vacuous nature around what life is. It's almost like they're going through life for the sake of social media, but they're not present or even aware of what's going on in their own life. It's ridiculous. I mean, I didn't come from, you know, huge grandeurs of growing up, but, you know, I was taught that if I had a job, my mum and dad would match that. So I feel like I have quite good money mindset. I have good beliefs around it. I believe in experiences, enrichment in my life. That is my fulfill. What fills your cup? And like, what is your view from like where you see social media now and this whole materialistic focus?
They're actually seeking validation out of things.
Like attaching to objects.
Yeah, objects like material.
And that handbag is my validation. Yeah. Like that money.
Yeah, material possessions, handbags, shoes, you know, the new car. And of course, you know, it's nice to feel comfortable, but that's not what's going to give you joy and happiness and fulfillment. That is always going to come from within. And a lot of people are scared to do the work. They're scared to actually look inside and be completely honest with themselves about how they feel about their sense of self-worth. And they're scared to do the work because it's going to open up a can of worms and they don't want to deal with the worms. So instead, they're going out, spending the money on luxury holidays and all of the things. And they get the short-term dopamine hit, sure. But that dopamine hit is going to last about 5 minutes. And then they're going to be looking for the next thing. And then they're going to be spending, and, you know, it ends up in a vicious cycle. When actually, if they do the uncomfortable work to begin with, they'll find the happiness and the joy and the fulfillment because they'll start
aligning. This whole hedonistic treadmill. And you see this when people win the lottery and they struggle to put meaning and purpose to their life because money hasn't brought them joy. And when we think about joy and abundance and infinite receiving and all of those amazing things that can happen, what is your view, bearing in mind that a lot of people probably see you online talking about motivation, manifestation? Where's the connect from where you came from? Because you used to work in banking, Maggie.
I did work in banking. But what I would also say is, which is interesting because I came from nothing. Yeah. So growing up, I was told, you know, work hard, work hard, work hard. I was the underdog. I was the black sheep at school. You know, I was surrounded by rich kids. I got a bursary, which enabled me, you know, my education was paid for, thank God. And I took advantage of every opportunity that was presented to me. So when I left uni, I was told, right, you need to get a good job, and success was seen as, you know, working for a bank or working for a management consultant. So that's what I did. I fell into banking for 11 years. I definitely tried to get out of it multiple times, but there was that voice in my head that was like, no, no, no. You have the great job. You have the job that most women would kill for. You've got the house, you've got the car, like keep working your way up. And that's also what my parents wanted for me because they didn't have that. And they struggled and they didn't want me to struggle. But then it got to the point where I just couldn't do it anymore. Like the burnout, the toxic culture, I just, you know, the impact on my mental health.
Can you imagine what you'd be doing on a Wednesday?
Oh, well, I mean, I would have been in the office until 11 o'clock at night. I wouldn't be at Wine Wednesdays, that's for sure. You know, I've seen it all. You know, I've been flown by helicopters into Monaco for a work trip. And on paper, I look back and I think, oh my God, like I did live that life. But I didn't really experience that life. I was still working 18 hours a day and given unrealistic timelines and deadlines. And then when I walked away from it, I was like, do you know what? Even if I go from this to like nothing for the next few years, that is going to bring me peace. And it's going to mean that my mental health is supported again, and I'm not going to feel stressed or anxious or any of the things that we go through when we work for big corporates. So I've definitely seen a lot. I've seen in the banking industry, you know, I've seen people blow a lot of money on things that would never be made public, that I remember seeing and reviewing, you know, expense receipts and thinking, I don't think that's in the code of conduct or that would get approved, you know. I've never been happier and more fulfilled than I am now because I'm actually doing something that's meaningful. And that for me is my definition of success. It's not the house, it's not the car. Sure, money is a wonderful thing. I love money because money gives you choice.
Oh, absolutely. And trips to LA.
Of course, and trips. And, you know, we love travel. So I'm super grateful to money, but the happiness first and foremost is always going to come from within.
So what would you say has been the biggest shift in your mindset from coming out of corporate to like what your daily routine is now?
Gosh, I think it's actually having time for me. I was that person who I would work hard and I would play hard. Like banking was a work hard, play hard culture and mentality. So I'd finish work, if I was in the UK, I'd try and finish work at 7 o'clock to meet my friends for drinks or dinner. And then I'd get home on a weekday, you know, midnight, 1 a.m., sometimes even 2 a.m. And if I was overseas with work, then we wouldn't finish until 10, 11 o'clock at night. Then we'd go to a restaurant, we'd be on the wine, we'd get to bed 2, 3 in the morning. And then we'd be up between 6 and 7 because we wanted to get a workout in before going to the office to be at the office for 8. So having time for me, not rushing out of bed and falling over myself and hitting snooze on the alarm and then swearing because I'm running late and I've got this meeting. I spend the first 2 hours of my day every day now just pouring into me. I don't touch any tech. I'm not on social. I'm not in front of my laptop. And I love that I have created the business and the space to be able to put me first at the start of each day before I go into boss mode or work mode.
And that's what I love. I think this is why we get on so well, because one of the things when I first met you, bearing in mind we were kind of in the online space, so many people who were obsessed with the phones. I felt like we were living by phone, not in reality. When we go out, we don't even know what time it is. The phones aren't even on the table. Like, I'm not interested. I am present and connecting. You know, the amount of time we've gone out, we don't even take pictures.
No, we don't.
Don't even share. We've been abroad, we've been on trips and not even taken content. And for people who work in the online space, I mean, that's probably not the ideal, but it shows that we are more interested in living our reality, connecting with people, having conversations. I've been to dinners where people sit on their phones all night and I'm just sitting there like thinking, what is this? And then I see the post on social media that says, oh my God, I had the best night. I'm like, what? Sorry, I was there. You weren't even talking to anybody.
Yeah.
You weren't even doing a thing. It's crazy.
Yeah, people just aren't present. And I have this rule that whenever I'm out with someone, not even just with someone, but as an example, when we go out, our phones are in our handbags.
Yeah.
They don't come out unless suddenly
mine's normally charging
ringing,
behind the bar because I've never charged mine.
Yeah, and we're always usually low on battery as well. And when you go out for dinner as well, like so many people are on their phones. But for me, I have this rule of, right, when I'm not at work and in front of my laptop, my phone is not on me. Even when I go down for dinner or I go into the lounge at home or, you know, the living room, wherever, my phone stays in my office. I do not carry my phone down the stairs with me because that is my time to eat and I want to be present and I want to be mindful and take in my surroundings. When I'm with people or with a person, I think it's rude and I think it's disrespectful if they're getting their phone out and they're on, you know, social media, which is what makes
me. Do you know we sound vintage?
We do sound vintage.
I love it.
But do you know what? Vintage.
Retro.
Yeah, like we're also a classic, like we're the OGs.
Oh, this is true. And I think what I like is the fact that phones aren't my life. And I do come back to the fact that it isn't everything for me. It is part of it. And I do know that we need to have it. If we think about then where you are going in the coming months. Like, obviously you've got your book coming out, which is super excited. I ordered, pre-ordered my copy. Think Like a Boss is on its way. You've got your audio book, but talk through the process, because we've both written books, and I think a lot of people from the outside kind of look and go, oh my God, that's just like amazing. It's like the dream, but it is hard. So let's share some reality on what actually getting the book deal and getting the book is actually like.
Yeah, I mean, to even get a book deal in itself is, you know, you're looking at like one in a billion of a chance. It's a privilege and it is an honor to get a traditional publishing book deal. Now, what you don't appreciate when you go into the process is actually how fucking hard it is. It's hands down, and you know, I did 11 years in private banking. Writing a book is hands down been the hardest thing I have ever done. And I went to an event the other week from an author who's just sold 1 million copies of a book in the last 18 months. And she said it on stage as well. She was like, writing a book is the hardest thing I've ever done. And it was so nice to hear that. Because number one, not many people have written books, or those that have gone down the self-publishing route. But to be able to, for someone else to actually voice what you've been feeling, because it's a journey.
Well, it's not just you in the process. This is what you forget when you think you're writing your book. Yeah. You forget that there's like hundreds of people that have a voice and have a say. How did that feel?
There were definitely moments that I found it really hard, especially when I was about midway through the process. I got to the point where I was like, this isn't working. Like, we're clashing, completely different personalities. And I'm someone who, you know, I can be very malleable, but also I know how I want my book to read and how I want it to feel. And I also don't like being micromanaged. And you have to almost be open to the fact that there are going to be different personalities that get involved in the process. And everyone has their own view and has their own opinion, which is great. And I'm all for listening to it. But I think when push comes to shove, if there's something that you really aren't in alignment with, you have to speak up for yourself. Because this is something that is then going to go to print. And once it goes to print, that's it. Like, it's out there and it's out there forever.
What's your baby?
It is your baby.
And it's got your name on it.
And you want it to be the best it can possibly be. So not just the whole writing experience, but having lots of different personalities involved in the process is hard. And also the deadlines as well. You don't appreciate, number one, quite how many deadlines
when you're an entrepreneur. You set your own deadlines. So I remember like, oh my goodness, like I've got to get this written. And for me, like, I remember pushing back on the cover. I'm so glad I did, because it came out and something I was very proud of. I think also what I wasn't expecting was the whole feeling of when I was writing, like I was waking up in the middle of the night and I was having to go to my manuscript to just check that I'd actually put that thought in. And then by the time you've kind of gone through all the chapters, you're so confused as what is in the head and what is actually in the script, that when you start reading it back again, you almost have to have the distance from it. What did you feel like when you finished it? Because for me, that's when I had imposter syndrome and I put it out. I was like, what happens if they hate it? Like, that's all that was going through my mind. I felt sick, literally felt sick.
I had that about halfway through the journey. I think by the time I finished it, which was only very recently, I felt exhausted and I was just ready to just close the book, close the laptop. And I was almost over it by that point.
Did you have any points where you were like, fuck it, I'm not writing this?
Yeah. And again, ironically, it was right at the very end. It's almost like at the end, you think, oh, I'm on the final stretch now. It's all going to be easy. And then there's obstacles and things that stretch you, that present themselves. And you're just at the point where you're like, I can't do this anymore. I'm done. And then you're so close. And then you have to remember that
have
you're
your
so
bloody
close.
Book.
Yes. And then you kind of have like your meltdowns, which for me happened in my local coffee shop a lot. Like, kudos to all the amazing baristas at Just Between Friends. 1 minute I'd be laughing my head off at something funny I'd written, thinking it was the best thing since sliced bread. And the next minute I'm bawling my eyes out thinking, oh my God, like, is this enough? Because this is going out into the world and it's going to be read by critics.
I think that's it. And it also with like a book that is sharing your personality, like you're bearing your soul. And that, like, people are going to push back on that. I think that's the recognition. What was it like doing the audiobook?
Oh, God.
Can I just say, I saw your story on the way there and I was just laughing the whole way. I was traveling somewhere and you and travel, it's either like a really good mix or it's really bad. There's nothing ever in between.
Every single day I went into the studio, which again was only a couple of weeks ago, I had a travel nightmare. It took me what should have been, you know, less than pretty much an hour each way, ended up being a 4 to 5 hour commute every single day. And on the last day, the universe actually saved me here because my train got delayed by ages. And then I was stressing because I was actually meant to be in the studio early that day because we still had a lot to finish on the last day. And then the tram that I should have been on got derailed. So then they like shut the whole network down in the city centre. And obviously I'm super grateful because I don't want to be on a tram that's just been derailed. But that was stressful in itself. So by the time I was getting to the studio every morning, I was exhausted before I'd even begun. And then no one really teaches you how to record an audiobook. You get presented with the mic, you've got a producer. My producer was amazing. Big shout out to Niall. And then you're in this room, which is kind of like a box room, and you're in there for like 9 hours a day. You know, he only gave me 30 minutes for lunch. I didn't get any breaks. You know, so it's really
imagining Maggie being put into this confinement in itself, I think, is just amusing.
And then he'd just be like, okay, go. And I'm like, go? He's like, yeah, go. I'm like, so what do you mean, go? He's like, start reading. I'm like,
where's
okay,
my tuition?
Yes, like, how do I do this? What tone should I use? Like, should I go slow? Should I go quick? And oh,
I remember you
asking
me, what voice should I use? Because I just use Maggie's voice. And you were like, oh, okay then. But I think the thing is that we go into such self-doubt. But I can't wait to listen to it because I want to know what voice you did use.
And do you know what? I actually, at the end, so that first probably, I'm not going to lie, it probably took me a good hour, maybe 2 hours to get into it. Because then I was like, oh, I'm just going to be myself, which I should have just
Is your first chapter... Margaret.
Which I should have done to begin with, but I think in my head I was like, oh, I need to be really serious. And
did you
really
re-record
like,
it?
I really wanted, there was no time at the end. He wouldn't let me re-record. But in fairness to him, he was like, look, you've done a great job. If it was bad, I would tell you. And then I made him replay the first 2 minutes, and after 60 seconds, I was like, please stop now. I don't need to hear anymore.
Oh my God, when does the audible come out?
It comes out on the same day as the physical, God. 14th of Jan 2025.
Oh, this is leading into like my best part of the podcast now, because at the white party last night, obviously we had a glass of fizz and we were talking about it, and I was winding you up about what I was going to ask you on the podcast, and you were like, please, nothing about this. I was like, this is not that type of podcast. But we've been chatting about on the island for the past few days about like really embarrassing stories, and you know how many I have got to share. So I am going to welcome you to the floor, Maggie, to share. And I can't even stop laughing because oh my God. Right.
This needs to go in the final cut, by the way.
Oh my God. This is going in the behind the scenes because I promised unfiltered, and this is definitely unfiltered.
Is it the dolphin story? Is that the story you want me to share?
Well, I think that should be the first story. So we
of what? The most embarrassing stories?
I want the most embarrassing business story, but I also need the dolphin story.
Okay.
And I'll try and pull myself together in between.
Probably say the most embarrassing business story is the first time I did a Facebook Live. So obviously, again, you don't really know what you're doing when you first start out. People are like, go on social media, put your face out there. And because I was still fresh out of my banking days, I was like, right, I need to be serious. I need to be corporate. So I had my laptop and phone all ready, and I went to get changed and I put a suit on because I thought that I should be wearing a suit because I thought that that would make me seem professional. So I hit play on the live. It was hands down the worst live I've ever done in my entire life. I sweated through my my clothes, my top, my shirt, my blazer, all of the things. And then at the end of it, I was like, what the actual F was that? Like, what the fuck? But I swore after that, I was like, right, never again am I doing a live in a suit and pretending. It was almost like I'd had regression back to my banking days.
I'm sorry, but I cannot see Maggie doing life in a suit.
I know, because like me, you know, anyone who knows me knows that I love colour, I'm sparkly and I'm just very high energy. And but I just, you know, in corporate, you're just taught to just almost not have a voice and to be very serious and very stern. And, you know, when you wear a suit, you'll be taken seriously. And I was like, right, I want people to take me seriously. So I felt like I couldn't be myself.
Have you ever had a cringe moment where you've met somebody that you've kind of like admired, or someone in the online space where you're like, oh my God, it's so nice to meet you, and you've walked away and gone, oh my God, I can't believe I've said that?
In terms of business space, no. Like, I remember being in a lift with Sarah Jessica Parker once from Sex and the City. And my biggest regret is my jaw was just wide open. Like, she walked into the lift. There was only four of us in the lift. I was like, literally. And then she looked at me as though, is there something wrong with this girl? And then we got to the ground floor, we left the elevator, we both went into the lobby, and I just was kept just staring at her. And I was like, afterwards, I was like, what the actual fuck? When am I ever going to get the opportunity to be in such intimate proximities with SJP from Sex and the City? Probably never again. And I blew it. I didn't even say hi or good morning or you go first. Like, I was speechless. But that's not a business story. In terms of business, I don't think I've really had embarrassing business story. Like, I have a lot of embarrassing personal stories, but in business, I just tend to like go silent if I see someone who I admire.
Like, with your massive following, obviously you've got like 2 million followers on Instagram, you have a movement that you're leading and you're empowering other women through motivation. Who has reached out? Like, spill the beans on who's like messaged you.
Do you know my favorite is Sharon Stone?
Oh, I love it.
Love Sharon Stone.
I don't even know whether all the listeners will even know who she is.
No,
she had like one of the most famous movies.
Yeah, in the 80s. So, you know, if you were born in the 70s and 80s,
was it Fatal Attraction?
It was, but wasn't it Basic Instinct?
Oh, Basic Instinct. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
So, if you were born in the 70s and 80s, then you'll know who Sharon Stone is. And maybe if you were born in the early 90s as well.
Just on the cusp.
Yeah, because that was her prime, almost like movie era, was that period. And she's lovely. Like, she's so nice. I definitely fangirled. There was a period where the Kardashians, specifically Khloe, like, she's really big into empowerment, motivational content, and she was just constantly regramming my content. And when that first started happening, I was like, oh my God, life made. Like, I literally, my VA bought me a t-shirt that said Regrammed by Coco, which was still like my favorite t-shirt ever. Ricky Martin. Love him. He's
living
amazing.
La Vida Loca.
Yeah, living La Vida Loca. He's amazing. And I think what I've realised through all of the celebrities or high profile public figures who do follow the brand and the account is everyone's just human at the end of the day. We're all human beings. Everyone wants to believe in themselves. Everyone wants to feel like they can. Everyone wants to feel empowered. And everyone wants to be motivated.
So, what's the vision? What's the mission? Like, you've got your book coming out in January. Like, where is Maggie going over the next 12 months?
I mean, you know, I always set myself ridiculous goals. I want to reach 1 billion people through social media in the next 12 months. I, of course, am releasing the book with the vision that it's going to sell millions of copies worldwide. I want to grow the community, you know, increase the visibility of the brand, and be an ambassador really for all the causes and brands that I believe in and that I love. And yeah, I just want people to just go out there and do the thing they want to do and believe that they can, because you can.
Amazing. So I'm sure everyone knows, but where can they follow you?
They can follow me on Instagram. That's the main platform. The podcast as well, also called Think Like a Boss. And I'm now on LinkedIn.
You're just starting your journey. You're starting
your journey. LinkedIn.
I think I was your second connection or third.
I think you might have even been my first connection, because I promised myself after I left banking, I came off LinkedIn. I didn't want anyone to know what I was doing. I was paranoid. I was like, oh, what are they all going to, you know, think or say about me? Because back then I didn't have the mindset that I have now. And I said, I'm never going to go back onto LinkedIn ever again. And fast forward 7.5 years and we're back on LinkedIn. And I'm excited about it.
I like LinkedIn. I think it's kind of like a really underestimated platform. You know, it's always been my favorite and I find it easier. But I get hundreds of messages a week. I find it less effort. Kind of like it.
Yeah, and I actually think I'm going to love it. And it's interesting because I do see myself almost going back into the corporate space, but in a different capacity, like empowering and speaking rather than...
Yeah, so like full circle, but like yeah, an involved manner.
Exactly, and trying to change the culture as well.
Mm. No, I think that's interesting.
Yeah, so it's funny, isn't it, how it comes full circle. So I'm excited to experience the LinkedIn journey.
I think I'm just about ready for the dolphin.
Okay.
I've pulled myself together enough, I think I can get through it.
Okay, so... dolphin story. I was on a holiday with my best friend in Mexico. This was probably like, maybe like 13, 14 years ago. And we'd gone away for 2 weeks. It was all inclusive. We had an amazing time. And the second to last day, she was like, right, let's do a trip. I really want to go see swim with dolphins. So we booked onto this trip and we went to, you know, the place where the dolphins were, and they kind of taught us what was going to happen. They were like, right,
is this in an aquarium or like in the sea?
It wasn't the sea, but it was a big, it wasn't a pool, but it was like, you know,
a dolphin aquarium,
maybe, let's call it a dolphin aquarium. And they were telling us what was going to happen. So one by one, individually, the dolphin was going to be in the water, and then we were going to go behind the dolphin. And what we were meant to do is like hold onto the dolphin's fin with two hands. And then when the dolphin was told to go, then the dolphin would almost like rise out of the water and we would rise with it. And then the photographer would like capture the footage and the photos, you know? So anyway, I get onto the dolphin and I wore a bikini, and the bikini bottoms were not the tightest. And they should have been tighter. I should have checked that before embarking onto
riding a dolphin.
So then I get onto the dolphin, and as it starts to move out of the water and it starts pushing up out of the water, I suddenly start to realize that my bikini bottoms are not going to withstand the velocity and the gravity of the water. So what then happens is the dolphin goes up and I realize that my pants are about to fall down. So I go from trying to hang on to the dolphin with two hands to hanging on to the dolphin with my left hand, trying to pull my pants up with my right hand, all while the photographer is capturing it all on film. Probably the most embarrassing moment of my life, because no one really wants to see that. And yeah, my friend...
Did you take the video?
I mean, I think the whole group was... No, I didn't. You could buy the photos and the video recording afterwards. Obviously, I did not, because I did not want... The memory is firmly ingrained in here. That is never going to go anywhere. So my advice to anyone who's ever looking to swim with dolphins or swim with any kind of animal, either wear a one piece... or make sure that your bikini bottoms or trunks are firmly tied.
That's definitely my favourite story. I don't even know why it tickles me so much, but I think it was the first time you told me.
But my face was literally, when I realised what was happening, it was one of initial elation because I'm on a dolphin,
like,
and it's
smiling.
A cute animal, to sheer horror and panic, thinking, oh my God,
I'm surprised
is this actually happening?
Keep hold on.
Well, I mean, I fell off pretty quickly, didn't I?
Face plant Maggie.
Yeah, exactly that.
Okay, amazing. Right, well, I think that is us done. So I think that's it. Thank you, Maggie.
Thanks for listening to Dawn of a New Era, the podcast brought to you in association with the Her Power community. This initiative was founded by myself, and it's all about empowering female founders to recognize their limitless potential and pursue their ambitions with confidence. Now, there is less than 1.8% that goes into investing in female-founded businesses, and we are here to make positive change. So come and support us on Instagram at Her Power community and find out more about what we're doing to support female founders to scale and grow their businesses.